You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from my apartment in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Charlie Davies, Matt Doyle, David Goss. MLS Cup 25 is set. The inevitable. We all knew it was coming, even those of us wearing decked out in Loons gear that now should probably take that off because, my God, the jinx. 3-2, the Seattle Sounders.
It's pretty bad. You should put something on. There you go.
I wasn't gonna leave that on the YouTube stream for everybody to see. It's a little bit troublesome up there. It's wiling on me. It's a little bit like Minnesota in the last 20 minutes of a win-or-go-home playoff game. Just, you know. Yeah, sorry. That came to me right there. 3-2. David Heinemann hit us up, said, death, taxes, Seattle in the playoffs. What just happened? We're going to try to answer that question. We're going to put a bow on Minnesota's season because from about, the 75th minute on, it just all went downhill. Everything was coming up loons. Reynoso, DeBassi, up 2-0. You're thinking Adrian Heath is leading this team to MLS Cup. They've done it. Oh, but they didn't. Finally, the chances went down for the Sounders. And Doyle, you had some interesting ways of describing this game and what it means and where we're going from here. How do you feel? What are you thinking? What now?
It didn't unfold the way I expected it to. I think we all considered Minnesota to be the massive favorites in this one. and Seattle had to, Cinderella story right here. That, by the way, right there, that highlight of Raul Ruiz Diaz scoring a goal, he is the greatest per 90 goal scorer in MLS history. There's not a single Minnesota United player within 10 yards of him. And then the game-winning goal by Gustav Svensson. You have to win the ball right there if you're DeBassi.
Can I just say death, taxes, and Matt Doyle speaking to video on what is supposed to be a podcast? Like, it's every show.
I just appreciate Minnesota fans being at their potentially all-time lowest and Doyle still bringing the fuego. You got to respect a man who always knows how to bring it.
Oh, man. I mean, we'll get to Minnesota. We always talk about Sounders. We're going to keep talking about the Sounders because they keep doing it. It's the fourth time in 5 years. We've talked about it as a dynasty. I think you have to say it is a dynasty. And will they be the favorites? Will they be the underdogs? I'm sure we will make some very ill-advised statements about that over the next week. What happened here for the Sounders? Like, this game in a nutshell, we could try to describe it. Set pieces. They maybe should have been down a man. Shane O'Neill got fortunate. And
they also maybe should have had a penalty kick.
Yeah, they maybe should have had a penalty kick too, but I mean, I don't think it evens out. But it was just like the onslaught. It was Minnesota sitting back. It was experience in the playoffs. It was having been there before. It was having better players. What was it? How did this happen?
I think it was a combination of all of it. I think when you look at Minnesota going up 2-0, there wasn't a ton Seattle had done wrong defensively at that point. The fouls that they gave up to give up the free kicks were unnecessary. They hadn't given up a ton of openings. Attacking-wise, they were slow. They got a little tunnel vision that time. In the first half, Lodeiro got caught on the left side a fair amount of time. I thought the ball stuck too much on Alex Roldan and at times Jovan Jones on the right side. And so in the second half, you saw a little bit more, but Will Bruin comes in. Seattle just keeps pounding the ball down the middle. The game becomes chaotic, and I think that's where the quality comes in. Will Bruin's ability as a goal scorer in this league to react quickly, Raul Ruiz Diaz's ability to react quickly, Nico Lodeiro's service from set pieces. But Minnesota sat deep. They had less time off. Adrian Heath didn't use any substitutions, and they basically invited Seattle in over and over again. And Seattle's good enough to take advantage of that. And I don't think any of it's really wild that it happened or, you know, that it would happen. But the sequence of it all and the energy to it was kind of mind-blowing in the end. But you come into this and say Seattle wins 3-2, that's not that surprising.
I'm just waiting for a Charlie take here, man. We were gonna you know, you did all the dunking motions in the last show when Sporting KC lost.
Yeah.
I was gonna be like 360 windmilling you on Emmanuel Reynoso. I was gonna be saying El Rey 24/7. I was gonna be asking you what you thought of the bend on the free kick.
Wait. You still should.
I am going to. Yes, I'm going to.
The guy had a goal assist. It's not his fault. Gustav Svensson.
Don't worry. I'm not going to do the 360. It's just going to be the very. It's going to be like the very easy. Just put the ball in the bucket.
There's no slam dunk here because I said Reynoso has showed quality, great, but I need to see it against the Seattle Sounders. I need to see it against the top team in the Western Conference. He showed it tonight, great. So now you can say he's one of those players on the same level as a Carlos Hill and a Nicolò Daro. But I needed to see that tonight. This isn't a player who was a world beater at Boca Juniors. This wasn't a player who was playing 90 minutes every game and doing what Christian Pavon does. He doesn't have a cap yet for the Argentinian national team. Not to say that's the easiest thing to do.
Bomb.
But you need to show me something before already putting him out on a pedestal. He did that tonight. Great. And that's what Minnesota United should be very thankful for and happy about next year, because we only got to see a small glimpse of Reynoso. And he was brilliant this year. But think about what he can do for your team after a full season and staying healthy. Obviously, that's the main goal, is keeping him healthy. But you got the player you've always wanted, and he's better than you, I think, you expected, especially in a short transition. Because a lot of players coming internationally don't do so well in the first couple of months in that readjusting. And you throw in COVID and all of the precautions that have to be done. So I give him a ton of credit. I give Adrian Heath a ton of credit for finding him and signing him. But again, not enough to overthrow the defending MLS Cup champs on their home turf.
Do they win this game? Do they win this game if they have Ike? I think they win this game if they have Ike, right?
I mean, it's hard to say that. It's just been an entire... It's been an entire year,
and they have acquitted themselves so well. But if you look at how those last two goals that the Sounders scored were given up, like that's Ike Opara winning those headers in that box.
Yeah, you're probably right. And they brought in Kai Kamara for just that reason. You would think like that's why Kai Kamara is there,
He actually won a couple. I was watching specifically for that. Kai was doing real work, but it's just staggering to me the way Minnesota gave up those second and third goals. I mean, we know stuff happens on set pieces, especially in the playoffs, but to have two corner kick goals, one where you leave Rui Diaz wide open and the other Gustav Svensson dunking on your center back from like 5 yards out. That was hard, man.
I think you bring up the perfect question is, we saw what Spencer did to change the game for Seattle. Once Minnesota went up 2-0, where were the changes there? The tactical changes, the substitutions. You talked about after the game, Adrian Heath mentioned the short rest. We didn't have enough rest. They had the extra rest. But you still had subs left on the bench. So what happened to using those guys to replace the people who had heavy legs? So I think it all comes back full circle, and the tactical approach once you go up 2-0 against Seattle Sounders, it's bring in those players to really make a difference defensively and absolutely park the bus. What you've done, you did so well before you had Reynoso. Go back to what you were great at before, which is absolutely negative soccer, and that's okay because you have a two-goal lead.
My guess is Dotson would have come on for an attacking player as a third central midfielder if he hadn't come on for Metanair. I was surprised Hairston didn't in that same moment. Not as good a player, not as good as a defensive player, but they've used him there before. And you would think at some point they would add something into that midfield to try and at least help Ozzie and Gregus not have to run for another 90 minutes after what they had to go through three days ago. Like Adrian Heath saying, I was worried about that coming into the game and through the game, but at no point did he make an attempt, to Charlie's point, to alleviate it.
Yeah, you had Jose Aja. What about putting him into the game as a defender? You talk about these set pieces on corners. Well, that's an idea. That's a thought. If I'm going to lock it down, especially knowing that Seattle are just going to be throwing numbers forward and looking for set pieces, bring on the big guys. So there you go.
No, and on top of that, if you look at the run of play in the second half, Minnesota had nothing. The only time they got forward was after Alex Roldan had hit what I would consider to be a pretty ill-advised cross that turned into not precisely a counterattack, but a transition moment that Minnesota were able to turn into that set piece goal. That was the only time they got forward with any sort of sustained possession and were able to knock the ball around the attacking third. They literally did not have a complete pass in the attacking third in the second half before that moment. So they were already in the midst of parking the bus. And the fact that, you know, Schmetzer brought Bruin on, which is his kind of his go-to tactical move, and it's a good one because it keeps working. And Adrian Heath did not sort of respond in kind by maybe bringing on another center back who can win the ball in the air and who can, because you know the last 15 minutes of these games, you know it's kitchen sink time. So it like I've seen some Minnesota fans who are pretty upset on Twitter. I have a couple of them in my texts happening as well. They want to know why three subs were kind of pop. Well, I guess two subs because Schoenfeld came on in the 95th minute. But it was look, Adrian Heath had his team ready and they played a really great first half and they have a difference maker in Reynoso. But there are understandable questions that are being asked now about the way he managed the last 15, 20 minutes of this game. Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Can I just say, I don't know how much it would have mattered. I think this game was going to play out the way it played out, and Seattle has the quality.
Team of Destiny stuff?
I just think...
I don't buy that.
You look at this game, and if we had come into it and said Seattle's going to win this game 3-2, no one would have been surprised. And once Seattle scores the first one, and it goes 2-1, they're at home. They're always going to throw on pressure. You bring on Jose Aja, it's not like you're going to possess the ball. It's not like it's going to help you. Yeah, it's another body in the box to help you defend set pieces. But the moments were all going to be exactly the same. And I think once Seattle made it 2-2, they were going to win this game, whether it was an extra time or the moment that Rui Diaz does it.
They were never going to possess the ball. Never. Minnesota.
Right. So then you bring on Aja. So I don't know that it changes the way any of it plays out. That's all I'm saying.
But he's just bigger and better in the air.
Fair. Yeah, if you talk about the set pieces, you need a big body in there who's going to win those challenges.
I think the point that Minnesota fans are making is I try to put myself in their shoes because I was wearing
the gear.
I am them. I am Midwest, and I'm not quite Northern Midwest, but you know how it goes. It's just like, we'll never know. And that's the problem. We'll never know. We had an opportunity, if you're a Minnesota supporter out there thinking, we had an opportunity to know if it could have been different. But we won't. Because the substitution wasn't made. And you get to this brink of this historic moment and you have the guy that you brought in and you have the summer signing too, get the goal in DeBassi, and you're thinking it all came off. We were a team that was frankly embarrassing to watch at times 2.5 years ago. And we've rebuilt ourselves into this, being on the brink of going to MLS Cup by beating Seattle Sounders in Seattle. I mean, I can feel that pain of thinking like, my God, what could have been?
Oh yeah,
because you don't know if you're imagine Minnesota. If you don't know. If you're the Sounders, you're like, if you lost that game, it would hurt. But you'd be like, we got a couple MLS Cups. Like, look at our roster. Look at our management. Where are we going to be next year? We're going to be right back here. If you're Minnesota, and no offense, Loons fans, I'm not trying to denigrate what this project is, this team, Adrian Heath, anybody, but you don't know. You don't have that sort of certainty within your club. You don't have that history of success, and that's why these things hurt so much. Because you were up 2-0 in the 75th minute in Seattle. And you didn't win it. And if you look at the record here, and I don't think this has anything to do with the subs or anything like that, but it is at least interesting from Jeremiah O'Shan on Twitter. Sounders are 8-0-1 against Adrian Heath teams. That's Orlando City and now Minnesota. I mean, that's tough. That's tough. And so, you know, the beat didn't go your way, but you kind of, as Dave said, you kind of expected that. And once it got into that kitchen sink time, that's what I expected too. You know, I was like 2 minutes behind you guys listening to you celebrate goals being like, yep, that makes sense. That makes sense. And here we are doing the same old MLS Cup, December 12th, Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, Fox, Unimas, Turien, TSN, TVA, in Columbus, Mapfre Stadium, the crew, the Sounders. I mean, it feels a little poetic, and maybe I'm like thinking of Siggy right now and the connections between both and everything else, but it feels a little poetic.
Yeah, final game at Mapfre Stadium.
It's not, though. I found out it's not.
Really? Why?
Yeah, they're going to have a couple games back there next year, but it's the last playoff game, the last chance to win a trophy. Porter
in Portland and that rivalry, kind of just the feelings he has towards Seattle. I like the game. I think it's going to be a good game. And Caleb Porter got the better of Bruce Arena in the Eastern Conference Finals and just neutralizing what New England had done so well in the playoffs, getting Tajon Buchanan involved in the attack, Carlos Hill cutting off his options, and then forcing Gustavo Bo to do something. And he really had a poor game, a poor showing. So I'm going to be interested to see what Caleb Porter comes up to try and stifle Nikola Darrow. Because if sometimes you try and cut him off, then Jao Paulo is playing Jordan Morris through, and Rui Diaz is just a poacher. He is a clear finisher. He's in front of goal. You know he's going to score. He's that good. So how do you cut off the service for Rui Diaz? It's going to be a tough task for any team, but Caleb Porter is really going to have to have a great tactical game plan heading into this one.
For Seattle, you have to hope the Jordan Morris you saw the final 25-30 minutes of this game is the guy, because last game was one of the worst we've seen from him in a while. In the first 45 for sure, but probably 60 minutes of this game, he wasn't a game changer. He wasn't effective, and there was openings for him to do it. There was space down that left side, and it was a couple runs from deep that they tried to hit him on, one through ball that caught him on the heel and went backwards where he could have taken it in on goal. He had one touch too long. And then he just didn't try and take advantage of one-on-one situations, and knew who's giving you that overlap. You can use it sometimes, but it felt like every time he wanted to get that ball to Nuhu, which ends up in a cross, a hopeful cross. And so it wasn't the Jordan Morris that we'd seen that had been a game changer by himself and was coming in field and creating gaps and finishing himself or opening up space for other players. They're going to need that against Columbus. He started to do it later in the game.
I'd give you 100 passes to Nuhu. I'd give you 100 passes out of 100 passes to Nuhu. If I'm faced up 1v2 and I got to pick one, I'm going to defend Jordan Morris. I'll give you Nuhu 100 times. So
fair. Yeah. But I mean, that's fair. But irrespective of that, the point was that like Jordan Morris was not sharp for at least the first hour in this one, and it goes back to like the way you think about players. Like we're right to criticize him for being in those spots and having the opportunity to sort of open the game up and not doing so, but what makes him Jordan Morris is that even when he's not sharp, he's always getting into those spots. Mm-hmm. He's always giving you the option so that you can't actually squeeze that midfield and get at Nikola Darrow and cut him off from service. Because if you do that too much, Jordan Morris is going to flare out over the top. And if Ladero's not hitting the ball over the top to him, then it'll be Jao Paulo. Roldan showed the ability to do that tonight. We've seen both fullbacks do that. Well, not Nuhu as much, but we've seen the fullbacks occasionally do that as well. So they have so many options, and that's what makes Seattle so tough. And that's really what Minnesota struggled with in the first half. In the second half, they struggled with everything. I mean, Seattle outshot them 24-7 overall in the game. And once it changed, once it went to 2-0, Seattle's ability to, I mean, they just kind of threw caution to the wind. And it felt like a tidal wave breaking with all of those guys, coming, just flowing into the box. I mean, it's Bruin, Rui Diaz, Morris, Ladero's up there as well. There's like 200 goals worth of MLS goals just in the attacking third right here. And guys who have, double digit playoff goals. It's so tough to handle all of that. But I think against Columbus, they can't let the game quite get open like that, because if you do, then it's Diaz and Jossi on the break and Pedro Santos as well. And we've seen what those guys can do going in the wrong direction if you're facing them the last couple of games.
And Lucas Zelarayán.
Yeah, Zelarayán obviously orchestrating the whole thing.
These feel like the two best teams in the league. And I know that the Union won the Shield and they were magnificent for the entire season. But I think
the term would be best roster is what you're looking for. And that may not be true, but I think that's more debate.
It's not results, because the Union had those. And obviously Seattle weren't the top seed. But the results and the schedule and everything was so weird. So maybe you're right. When I say best teams, I'm not saying, again, a result. It's just like, hey, if you're going to run these guys out there for 90 minutes and say, who am I going to bet on? Who do I think is going to win? Who has it? like the it factor, whether it be competitiveness or talent or the final ball or the just the inevitability that kind of comes with the experience and everything that, that the Sounders and to a large part, a lot of these crew players have too, though they just recently came into being winners. It's these two teams, and that's fun. And that's awesome. Let's break down this game a little more, and we'll talk on Thursday. But I want to kind of rewind us back because we jumped on Minnesota and Adrian for his subs, and we're like, God, what could have been? But on the flip side, I mean, the Sounders were looking a really just sort of gut punch loss in the face themselves and found a way to turn it around. What does this return to MLS Cup mean for them in the grand scheme? I mean, they have a head coach that's negotiating for a contract right now. And that seems crazy. This is a team that's been to four of the last five MLS Cups, and they have a coach that's negotiating a contract, not renegotiating, just trying to get a deal for next year. And that's part of this whole baggage. But like, here they are again. What does it mean for the club? What does it mean for Brian Schmetzer? What does it mean for these players? What does it mean in this sort of epic of Major League Soccer?
It starts with a D. I think Doyle wants to talk about it. What are they? What is it, the Seattle Sounders now?
So if they get 3 in 5 years, right, they probably have to consider them a dynasty, don't you?
I would already. They've been to four or five. They've won 2 or 5 at a minimum. I already would consider them that. But you can do whatever you want.
Do you consider the 2002 to 2005 LA Galaxy to be a dynasty?
No, but I would put the Revs in that conversation. They lost every final.
That's weird as hell. That's fine. Okay.
Seattle won the Shield in 2014, and now they've been in 4 or 5 finals. MLS Cup is a Seattle Sounders game.
They've been to 9 finals in 11 years across all the various cups they've played. They've won a Shield. Whether they win this or lose this, they are the model MLS franchise. They really are. They're how you want to see. Like, they've brought homegrowns through and either turned them into stars here in Jordan Morris or sold them to a Premier League team in DeAndre Yedlin. They have signed players who are starters for the likes of, you know, Ecuador, Sweden, Uruguay, like legitimately great players. They found guys in USL. They have signed multiple great goalkeepers, either at the tail end of wonderful MLS careers like Casey Keller and Marcus Hahnemann, or guys who were really well regarded in MLS like Stephen Fry and turned him into one of the three best goalkeepers in MLS history, maybe one of the two best. They found guys in USL, they find guys in the Super Draft, they go out and identify talent in South America, in Europe, in Africa. Like this is what you want your team to be. And like year after year after year, we see this from the Sounders, and we should just stop being surprised. They're probably a dynasty. I don't know what else to say. This is the time where you want the live chat to be actually on the screen so people can see what Anders is saying.
It's a dynasty. The Ladero, Rui Diaz, Morris, that trio, that is the head of this dynasty. This team is a dynasty. This club has done it. They, like Doyle said, they're a cut above the rest. They've been consistent, successful, just run the right way. Everyone that comes through the Sounders program, comes through the doors, raves about the club, the supporters, the city. So, I mean, I've never heard someone mention something negative about Seattle. So I think they are the model citizens when you talk about Major League Soccer and really just kind of just hitting everything out of the park. That's what Seattle has done. And now here they are in another MLS Cup, and they've really proven it. So hats off to Seattle.
And just to add to that, any sports fan who's never watched an MLS game could say, oh, they've been in 4 or 5 finals. That's impressive. I think Dwayne Rollins put this on Twitter. 15 of 26 MLS clubs have been in a conference finals since 2015. But there's a lot of churn in MLS.
Yeah.
And so that makes what Seattle's done even more impressive.
Yes.
This is a league of parity, and this is a league where one change, one misstep in a playoffs, and you're out, and a great team is forgotten, and a team maybe that isn't deserving moves on. And Seattle has, through all of that, over this 5-6 year period, because of Western Conference Finals in 2014 as well, and a Supporters Shield, they've been able to maintain through that. And I think that is what makes it so impressive. the way they've done it in what the landscape of MLS has been over this time period.
I also think about the struggle that teams have replacing iconic players, like not just within the club and the culture and everything that, that happens in a team, but in like the performances, like what other clubs, I mean, other clubs go get Ozzie Alonso and all of a sudden now they're a playoff team. Whereas the Sounders move on from Ozzie Alonso and you have to hit, and you probably can't hit on like a cap number that's at a DP level, or Chad Marshall retires unexpectedly, or Clint Dempsey leaves. Oba's gone. Or, you know, on down the line, or like, you know, I know it's not, look, Brad Evans maybe is not the right example there, but a leader within your club. And now, okay, now Christian Roldan is all of a sudden this crux that does everything, that can play anywhere. It does it as a high level and drags the team along competitively as well. It's like all these things that would trip up and do trip up other clubs just haven't tripped them up. Like I was, as you guys were going through that, I was trying to rack my brain. I was like, okay, what has been a miss? Like what's been a whiff? Because that happens to every club. Good clubs, bad clubs, well-run clubs. I mean, they miss. That just, sometimes
Atlanta
your process,
United. Look at Atlanta United.
sometimes your process just doesn't work.
That is straight swing and a miss on multiple occasions.
But Seattle have missed on DPs.
Yeah, but yet, it's been a while, dude. It's been
well, Victor Rodriguez, sort of. Although he then went on to win MLS Cup.
Victor Rodriguez, you wouldn't say this guy was a complete
but that's
miss.
Okay, but
I would say this.
They can miss on him.
But the reason it doesn't matter is because Christian Roldan and Jordan Morris aren't DPs that play at that level sometimes. But the biggest reason all of this is Nico Lodero.
Yes.
He is why you can turn things, change pieces around, and sometimes hit and sometimes miss. And some guys are out hurt and some guys are on international duty and they're there every day. A lot of it falls on him, his ability to play at that level all the time and the way he can change what he has to do and fit everyone around him. Well, that is the one consistent.
And it's literally what we're seeing teams like Minnesota with Reynoso and Columbus with Zella Ryan try to do. Everybody's out there now trying to find their own Lodero, because what Seattle's done the last 5 years with this guy as the heartbeat of all of it has just been so remarkable. And I mean, there's a reason we've been singing their praises for the past 10 minutes. They really have earned it. I think even more remarkable to your point, Weeby, in terms of the stuff that trips up, you know, think about how great the Galaxy dynasty was and how they just immediately went in the toilet after a couple of bad signings and they're still trying to get out of it. The Sounders, other than maybe their first year, 2009, when they nonetheless did win a trophy, they've been a plausible MLS Cup champion literally every single year of their existence in MLS. Literally every single year. And sometimes, okay, they would have been underdogs. It would have been a little bit surprising. 2011, they lose Steve Zakuani. Talk about a thing that could ruin a franchise. They lose Steve Zakuani, basically ends his career. But they were still one of the best teams in the league that year. They finished second in the Supporter Shield this following year. Like this is a team that for whatever reason, you probably have to look at ownership and then, you know, the front office structure. They've just been able to create and cultivate such top down stability that it would be absolutely insane to imagine at this point in MLS Cup playoffs without Seattle making a deep run.
You want me to throw a little extra fuel on this fire, by the way?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Part of the reason is the fans, the atmosphere, and the city. I think other clubs would have struggled to hold on to a Christian Roldan and a Jordan Morris. Gustav Svensson's going to start in a World Cup. I don't know that there's a lot of MLS clubs he stays with after something like that, but I think the atmosphere in Seattle is at a level where people want to be a part of it, and they're getting noticed because they're on national TV all the time if they want to play for the U.S. national team. And I think they get noticed a little internationally because they're in finals, and that stuff is aware, you know, awareness and all those things. And I think that has kept this team, their ability to keep guys, and even guys like Jovan Jones bring them back when they want to and all that. So Anders agrees with me. I think Seattle is good is because they have good fans.
You're not adding any fuel to the fire.
This is like a forest fire and just raging out of control. I mean, there's no fuel that can even keep that thing going more. Also, we haven't even talked about Raul Ruiz Diaz, which might be one of, if not, you know, if you're talking about Raul, like Nico is one of the best signings in MLS history. Where does Raul Ruiz Diaz stand up? I mean, in the playoffs, just straight killer. Like, it just crazy. And Liga MX is a place a lot of people have gone. But nobody's doing what Raul Ruiz Diaz is doing. Who?
I don't understand. You're just saying scoring goals?
I'm saying a lot of people have spent $8 million or whatever it was. What was right. it? Eight on a striker?
But SKC and Columbus did it this year, and it worked out pretty well for them.
Yeah, but it hasn't worked out really as well. You have to hand every now and again, David. Come on now.
Columbus is yet to be, to be written. So you never know. So to Goss's point, Alan Pulido, had he played, could have been the difference.
Oh, that's part of it.
And Lucas El Rayan.
Okay, we're talking about a lot of could have been's the difference. Whereas I'm talking about somebody who's lifting cups and scoring what? Like he scored 8 goals or something crazy in the playoffs last year? And basically put him back in this one? And is a constant threat? Is this stupid consistent?
He has 4 goals, 4 assists. He's played 9 career MLS playoff games. He has 9 goals and 6 assists in those games.
I'm just trying to back up my man Goss.
Goss got on the wrong whim on that one.
I'm trying to give him some love.
He's been a really good regular season striker, and he has just gone to a different level in the playoffs, unlike anything that we've seen from any previous striker. Like we nobody's put up these kind of numbers in the playoffs, and it's bordering on legendary.
If you could choose both players in their prime, healthy, Ruiz Diaz and Joseph Martinez, who do you take?
Joseph Martinez.
I take Joseph. Yeah.
You made it seem like Ruiz Diaz is the best striker.
No, that was what Weeby was saying.
So no, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying like to be this team for this amount of time, you have to hit on your $8 million striker.
Yep.
And like
he is one of the best in the box finishers in MLS history.
Agreed.
He's probably Charlie would know better than me. He's probably the cleanest finisher in the league right now. But he doesn't really affect the game a lot outside of that. And he doesn't have to because Nico Lodero and Morris and João Paulo, and they have all these pieces. So it fits perfectly for them. Joseph is the existence of Atlanta United. There are other guys who have what Henry did at Red Bull. Guys like that, they had to do a little bit more. But to your point, Weeby, they spent the money on Ruiz Diaz and it's been worth every penny.
Yeah, they knew what they needed. They didn't need something more than that because they had Nico. Now, look, do we have an email here that goes this way? Quote, I know this won't make it in. Well, it did. But while I'm so annoyed right now, Minnesota had a legit chance and let it slip away because of set pieces and exhaustion. I'm tired of seeing and hearing about the same teams all the time. And I bet 75% of the next Extra Time episode will be a Seattle love fest. Please don't.
The post-game Seattle Sounders Western Conference final win show. Probably talk about Seattle.
No, I think we've loved them up pretty good. And Thursday, we'll keep on doing it. And if they win again, you'll get more and more of this. So Anders says that all his Seattle people are in the YouTube stream just loving it. We'll get back to you guys. How about you put things in that Anders can send to us, and then we can use that as jumping off topics. How about that? Let's talk about Reynoso, though. And let's talk about Minnesota and what they proved or what they didn't prove. Is this something, this run, without a real... like starting certainly no Ruiz Diaz, but no tried and true, this is our guy, number 9, because Amaria's been hurt, because Kai Kumar hasn't been that guy for them, because they decided the false 9 with Robin Lode was working better, because they just didn't have that guy on the roster. Is this sustainable? What does this say about next year? How does this change your expectations for them? How does this change just their club? Because this is such a huge, huge, huge step for the Loons.
They have a lot of great pieces. Look at Hassani Dotson. I'd like to see him step up and find a role in the starting 11 because I think he has a really bright future. You have Aiko Parra if he can get back. I hope so that we haven't seen the last of him because he's just a wonderful defender when you see him, his aerial dominance, his organizing the back line. Dane St. Clair stepped up out of nowhere as your goalkeeper. Now you know he's your number one moving forward. Then you have to figure out what you're going to do with Tyler Miller because I think you've spent a lot of money in acquiring Tyler Miller. Chase Gasper, lockdown left back. I really like what I've seen from him, and I think he's only going to get better with experience. I think Jan Gregouche, another player you hit on, I think he's made a massive difference for Minnesota. And then now Ozzie Alonso is getting up there in age. Still, you know you can depend on him when he's healthy, when he's fit. But we all see the body starts to break down as you get older. Father Time's undefeated. So is it Hassani Dotson who transitions into that spot, right? I think those are some of the questions Adrian Heath is going to have to deal with. Reynoso, star in the making. You love what you got out of him. And then Robin Lode, surprisingly, for me, I didn't know he had that in his locker, what he was able to do this year. But this is a player who can now, he can score goals. He can create. He can play on the right. He can play on the left. He works on both sides of the ball.
I know that he can play on the left, by the way.
Yes, he can play on the left.
I think it took him a year to score an MLS goal because he couldn't play on the left. And now he plays on the right and in the middle, and he's like really good.
He can play on the left.
Okay.
Kevin, this is, Molino. So you got the three there. We're getting to the point here, which is forward. Forward.
No, they don't have Molino, though. They don't have Molino locked in.
Well, that's going to
be interesting.
That is going to be a thing because he's 30.
Yeah, 30. Yeah, has a pretty lengthy history.
They're going to have to pay him. So and then you have Amarillo up top. So I think with a healthy Amarillo, it changes the game for them.
I'm not as sold on Amarillo as you are, but like either way, we expect them to bring in a number nine. The real game changer for me for this team would be getting Ike back healthy. Because if you have the even 85% of what Ike was in 2019, that allows you to start sending Metanier forward again. And the big difference between this year's version of one of the big differences between this year's version of Minnesota and last year's was that they weren't able to just release Metanier up that sideline and create that kind of width because they didn't have that kind of coverage behind him. You need your right center back to be able to, first of all, read the game at a high level, second of all, cover a ton of ground. Nobody did that better than Ike Opara when he was healthy. So if they get him back next year, and suddenly you have one of the best attacking right backs in the league on the overlap, and then you have, whether it's Robin Lode or some other winger, and you have a true number nine, and you have Reynoso pulling the strings, and then you have maybe Molino coming in off that left wing, suddenly your attack is not, we're top seven, top eight attack in the league. Suddenly you have a real claim to be like, we have the best attack in the league. Nobody is going to be able to stop this. So obviously the number nine, whether it's Emery or someone else, figure out the wing rotation. I do think they have to bring Kevin Molino back. Manage Ozzie's minutes, whether that means Dotson starts half the game, figure out a way to make both players fine with that. But man, if they get Ike Opara back and he's close to what he was last year, this team is going to be terrifying in 2020.
Yeah, they'll be the favorites. They'll be the favorites. Yeah,
they'll be the favorites every single game, just like Peter Ramiz said. I hear a lot of pundits saying it.
And I think you walk away from this year with all of what they've done, you can still say if Ike isn't at his best or if he has to take games off or if Ozzie can't play a full season, they can still get results.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we knew that coming into this year. So that's a huge plus on top of what they've gotten from Reynoso and what his capability is. Also, Amarillo is on loan. So I don't know that it's a guarantee he's coming back. They gave themselves that out. I don't know he did much to prove that he deserves to be the guy. They were happy to get rid of Angelo Rodriguez after 1 year. So I wouldn't be surprised if they go for another DP9 somewhere else.
I feel like Kevin Molino has to come back. And they're going to have to figure out what number that is because his injury history, his age, et cetera, would think that it would depress it a little bit. But his production this year and his relationship with Adrian, I think, is what trumps all. If I'm Kevin Molino, I'm not leaving. Like, we are going to work this out because when I'm at my best, it's playing for this guy that believes in me more than anybody else has ever believed in me. I can't see that partnership.
There are teams in MLS who will bring him in to be their guy. There are teams in MLS where he would be the best creative player on their team. Yes.
Who?
Okay. Cool.
But is that the right situation?
Nashville?
Actually, Nashville could be a decent one for him. Now you're selling me on Nashville. Now you're
Chicago?
Selling me on Nashville. Wouldn't do it. Wouldn't do it.
Vancouver,
if I'm
like there are teams
in MLS.
Wouldn't
do it if I'm him. I guess if it's just money and the numbers are hugely different, maybe they would be. But would those teams go in with a DP number at that age, at like a $700,000-$800,000 number?
I don't know, but I'll also say this: MLS teams sometimes do wild things.
Kevin Molino is not a DP.
So that's what I'm saying. There's a number that they can find
in Minnesota.
I don't
know how you can just say that. Alongside Reynoso, he just carried them through the playoffs. There are guys in this league who are DPs who don't deserve to be.
He's not a DP.
13 goals and 4 assists in about 1,400 minutes this year.
I mean, it was really good.
Yeah, it's great. It's not a DP. So
I would stand. Minnesota,
what did Adam Buksa have this year?
Did I sign him?
Why is that saying there are guys who are DPs?
Why is Adam Buksa catching the stray?
Great, but he's not a DP.
But he is.
I don't know one general manager that say, I'm going to break the bank for Kevin Molino and give him DP money to sign him.
There's just been too much inconsistency in his career. There has. And I love him. You know I love him. But the best Kevin Molino is the Kevin Molino that plays with Adrian Heath. And Heath will give him the reign that he needs. And he'll have Reynoso. Why would you leave Reynoso if you're Kevin Molino right now based on what's happened? Like, that's true. Yeah. Okay. But that's why you have to come to what I think he made like north of 500K this year. I think they can find a number in that region that probably is pretty fair and pretty market value in MLS. Well, we'll see.
You could even pay him more than that and buy it down as a TAM player. So like, for instance, like a Bedoya who was on, you know, 1-2 or whatever, he was bought down. So he wasn't, you know, like you could buy people down. So they're not TPs, DPs, but they make, let's say $1 million a year.
Big and decisions.
I think a player like Molina would be like, yeah, I'll sign it right now.
Okay. Every club but two is making those big decisions. You're starting to see different players not be re-signed or be pushed into free agency or in negotiations. All that news at MLSsoccer.com. By the way, Tom Boger, or Tommy Scoops. Or
be caught by teams, but also be coming to CCL with them in a week, which is so
amazing.
But it's amazing.
Major League Soccer.
2020.
It's a bitter pill sometimes. Let's run through some news from the league. I mean, we're gonna really dive in to MLS Cup 25 on Thursday. Just to remind you, Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, Fox, Unimas, TUDN, TSN, TVA. You'll be just inundated with that information, I'm sure, if you listen to this podcast over the next week or so. We will get into Crew. We will get into Sounders.
I think the last game before the COVID layoff, Columbus went to Seattle, and it was one of the better games. Mm-hmm. And obviously we didn't see that many games in normal environments, but it was one of the better games we saw of the year. So there's a lot of fun stuff to watch for.
I'm really excited about this game. As I said before, I think these are the two quote unquote best teams. And if that's what you get at the end of a season that's been as effed up as this one, like you just have to be thankful. You have to be like,
we even get the jerseys to put on. Yeah,
I know. You know what? Fate, baby. Fate. I had them. I was ready to go. You noticed. I appreciate it. You got like the Rolodex in there, and I don't have that. Let's get into some news because we haven't mentioned Alejandro Pozuelo is the Landon Donovan MLS MVP. He got that one done. 35% of the vote. The player vote actually went to Diego Rossi by 2%. The club vote, media vote, both big time for Pozuelo. Not sure what. Some of the players were watching to go Rossi on that one. I know he did lead the league in scoring, but as far as value, I think certainly Pozuelo is the one. But it's a weird year. This MVP, to me, while I did vote Pozuelo, while I felt strongly about it, it doesn't hold quite the same weight as years past. Is that wrong to feel? I don't want to make it less special for Pozuelo. He's an incredible player. He deserves it. He is the MVP of this season. It just doesn't quite feel... It's not Carlos Vela setting the league on fire. It's not Joseph Martinez doing the same. Just something feels a little off to me.
I mean, in terms of raw numbers, he didn't put up mind-bending numbers, in large part because he tailed off the past month or maybe 6 weeks of the season. It came out he had picked up... everybody on Toronto picks up injuries, and turns out he was no different in that regard. But I'm not taking any of the shine off any of these trophies. In particular, the Canadian teams had to basically live in a hotel away from their families for months at a time.
And in
Connecticut?
I mean, there's not even good pizza there.
Oh boy, maybe. Don't push it too far, man. Don't push it too far. I think this is not going to go down as an iconic, like, I remember what happened when type of MVP season like Vela had last year, or Joseph in 2018 or Wando in 2012 type of thing. But he was awesome.
He was
for the majority of the season, he was unquestionably the best player. On his team, the best player in the league, and despite the fact that his teammates were all breaking down or underperforming around him, and he absolutely deserves this trophy. And he's another like this. I know we're not really getting into Toronto right now, but if you are able to go out and use that DP slot next year to get like a Jordan Morris level winger, to put on that front line with Io Akinola and presumably Jonathan Osorio, and then have Pozuelo, Delgado, and Bradley underneath, suddenly you're talking about Toronto FC and Seattle Sounders and MLS Cup again, because that would be a terrifyingly good front six.
And I think in a year, one of the things that's tough, Weeby, is like normally we have weak buildups of LAFC's going to Atlanta. What will Vela do? Yeah. We didn't really have that this year because we didn't have any breaks. We didn't have the big buildup around games. But the few we did was Toronto, Columbus, Toronto, Philly. And in a bunch of those, Pozuelo showed up big and had a goal or an assist and kept his team going, especially in some tough moments. So I think that's where it stood out to me, was a lot of seasons you have playoff-like games throughout the season, and how do the big players perform in that? It was tough to kind of get that throughout 2020, but I thought Pozuelo did it in the moments that he could in the regular season.
I think it was the lack of the strong finish, because I started beating the MVP drum for him like 2.5 months before the season ended, because anytime you watch Toronto, you understand what the gravity point is and what everything revolves around. Like, they want to find his feet in the attacking half, and then he runs it. And you run off of him and off his decision-making and off his passing ability with both feet and off his ability as well to get in positions to finish. And maybe that's part of it. Like, I wasn't trying to take the shine off. It didn't feel the same to me as some of these previous seasons. But you're right. That's because we haven't had the rhythm. Like, the drum beat was just all over the place. There was none. There was no way to sort of like-for-like measure and see guys in moments of rhythm. It just didn't exist. So maybe that's where that comes from for me. But I did enjoy that Nico Solidaro got in there, was third. That was cool. Jordan Morris had a little shout in here as well. He had 13% of the player vote. Andre Blake. I can't remember the last time I've seen a goalkeeper in the top five for the Landon Donovan MVP. But ultimately, it's the Spaniard. It's Alejandro Pozuelo. Congratulations to him. He said he said it felt special. He said, I'm just a regular guy. Well, that's not true. I mean, what he does, regular guys can't do. And special guys, most of them can't do it either. So congratulations to him. But we keep talking about number 10s as well. And it's a theme. You know, you look at these last four teams remaining. We already said it. Carlos Gil, Zelarayan, Nico Ladero, Reynoso. You go to the teams before that. And like even a guy like Hani Mukhtar. I mean, it feels like in this league right now, to be at the top level, you need to have a guy who can run the show in some ways, who can make his teammates better, who can be the final piece. And Alejandro Pozuelo was all that. The Dynamo are looking for that. They got two DP spots. Yeah. They got two DP spots. I'm just looking at here. I'm like, well, the Houston Dynamo don't have that. Now they're selling Mauro Minotas probably 6 months to a year too late to Club Tijuana. Needed to happen at some point. Rumor was they turned down some big offers before. What do we think now? I mean, we've been asking for this for a while, I feel like, to say, hey,
Charlie just looked down and shook his head.
You don't got any time for Mauro Minotas going to Tijuana right now, Charlie?
No, I don't. I mean, Houston gutted their team. What more is there to say?
When you have the 24th best team in the league, maybe you get the knife and gut away, you know?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's on Tab. It's on Houston to identify players that are going to be, you know, good locker room guys and guys that are going to go out there and perform and get results. They rebranded, if you guys didn't know. And so maybe we see something new from the Houston.
And look, the pressure is on Matt Jordan. It should be on Matt Jordan.
Oh, yeah.
He just signed a one-year deal. I mean, I think that alone, that news alone, that sentence alone says something pretty clear. And so now it's what next?
So you mentioned the number 10s. You can also think about it as the four teams that made it to the conference finals spent really big on a few players. And those players almost across the board carried them to this point. And it's not the rule in MLS. Nashville was able to do what they did in spending a little bit less than teams in the past have. But we are in a new era of spending in MLS. And it doesn't mean every team has to, but if you don't, you have to have a good idea of what your team's doing. And I haven't seen that from Houston. So that's the question mark for Houston going forward. And I think this was a really bad year for Tab to have to take over a new team and try and build that. But he has to lay the groundwork over the next 3-4 months of whatever style he wants to play, identifying the exact players or finding players in their academy that can make a difference. Whatever it is, there are teams that aren't going to spend the numbers that New England spent on Bo and that Seattle can spend on Rui Diaz. And you have to have ideas of how you're going to compete with those teams if you're not one of them. And Houston hasn't shown that they're going to be one of them.
And it's not just that. I mean, I look back at the playoffs here. I mean, Orlando, what they've spent on, what Pereira was a free, but they're paying him. Nani, I think, was a free too, but they're paying him big. And then they went and got guys in the draft and they have an identity through Poppy. I mean, Nashville didn't spend, but they had a coherent identity and they did spend when it came to allocation money. And they did go find guys who are clear performers in this league. I mean, Sporting Kansas City realized we do have to spend. And they went and dropped $10 million on Alan Pulido. And by the way, they have a number 10 who's international quality. And
Gutierrez, yeah, he was just hurt. The back half. They forgot out the back half of the starting 11.
Well, that also speaks how hard this is going to be for Houston. This is going to be hard. Like, they're not going to just, I don't think they're just going to waltz into like contendership here or frankly, just being in the playoffs. Like, it's going to be a long, hard road for them. No Elise, no Mauro Manotas. Maybe Christian Ramirez can finally get some run. But there's a lot of pieces missing. They got to figure that out. Let's keep it rolling. Gabriel Heinze, one step away from coaching Atlanta United. Finally! Almost finally. Like, maybe, hopefully, finally for Atlanta. I mean, this feels like the right hire. This feels good. Of course, Frank DeBoer.
I was about to say, someone said that half ago.
Would you say that if Patrick Vieira was the guy that they were about to sign?
Yeah, I would say that.
Yeah.
So in your eyes, what would be the better signing at this point if both candidates were?
Well, let's bring it down. Neither of them are guys that you would say are like 5, 6, 7 year signings, right? That's not going to be Greg Vanney at Toronto or what you might expect Caleb Porter in Columbus to be, or what Jim Curtin, for instance, has been in Philly, or Peter Vermees in Kansas City, or Schmetzer in Seattle, right? Am I wrong in thinking that? Both those guys feel like you get a couple years.
Maybe not so much Patrick Vieira, because he went over, tried, and it didn't work out. And so if you're signing with Atlanta, which is arguably one of the bigger clubs in Major League Soccer, and you have this big bankroll, for him to leave that, it's got to be a really compelling job. There's not too many out there that you would just give up an opportunity with Atlanta when they're paying you all this money and you're having success if he's doing well to leave. So those opportunities don't come around too often. So I would look at Patrick Vieira as a long-term signing, as like a 4 or 5 year contract and not like a 2, 3 year deal.
At the same time, I would say the one thing that we cannot guarantee is that a coach who's not coached in this league will be successful in this league. It's weird. Yeah. MLS is just different. And so it's one of the most dangerous parts of bringing in a coach from outside of MLS. And so Vieira's already success to a level in MLS, or at least his understanding of trying to figure out what's going on and grasping it. I mean, he traded up in the Super Draft twice for a coach who was coming from Man City and had won a World Cup. Ruud Gullit didn't even know that the draft was happening. Like, those are the extremes that we can experience with coaches who come from overseas. So Vieira, for that reason, I think that's why he's an ideal coach. Although, Charlie, isn't your former club going after him? No, there's another French team that's rumored to potentially be picking him.
Nuts.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's the show.
Yeah.
My bad. Sorry, Charlie. I would expect. Your team. I would expect Toronto to you know, call Patrick Vieira's agent and see if there's interest in coming back to MLS, because he is damn near the ideal candidate for all these reasons. You know, he's his soccer brain is elite. You know, his IQ is off the charts, World Cup winner, and everything in between. And he put that to work in MLS. He took that NYCFC team that was a disaster in 2015, and by the middle of 2016, they were playing some of the best soccer in the league, and they kept that up basically for the duration of his stay. And it was like, that was one of the best teams in the league to watch, just from a purely aesthetic standpoint. Now, he hasn't had the postseason success. Nobody for NYCFC has had any kind of postseason success. But I think you live with that because of what Patrick Vieira as your manager would mean globally and locally and what he's done. But that also kind of does apply with Gabriel Heinze. Like, Gabriel Heinze is, like, he's got 80 caps for Argentina. He has managed Man United, and he you know, the,
like
that
good
time
Man United, out. Not like mediocre yeah. Man United. Like yeah.
I mean, you know, the ultimate Heinze clip from Man United was when Kaká skinned him and Evra and made them like conk together like the Three Stooges. That's one of my favorite gifts. But he's a really well regarded manager down in Argentina. That like his MO is he gets the most out of his players, and he's not necessarily married to any one particular tactical system. He's not going to put square pegs in round holes. So it kind of feels like the opposite of Frank de Boer. But the question, as you said, we be David, whoever said it, you don't know in this league. You don't know if someone can manage in this league until you actually see them do it. Because MLS is a weird animal.
But you look at their transfer business and the amount of money they spent and where they've spent it and sort of the identity that they've been honing as a club, both like within the locker room, on the field, but also in their transactions. And that's where I start to think, okay, Heinze makes the most sense for them. This seems to be what they want to be. They want to be a team that goes to South America and gets the talents like Miguel Almirón or like Barco or, you know, all these different guys that have come through and then gets a couple good years and then moves them on. And sometimes, like Joseph, they'll stay forever. To me, Heinze makes sense for them. And he makes sense because they still have to have that locker room with a lot of those same guys come good. And he's probably mm-hmm. the guy most likely to make those big investments come good. And oh, by the way, we like went on a tangent about Patrick Vieira. But if you're a club that can attract Gabriel Heinze, you are a big club. And like you should be happy with at least your standing, certainly not the results, but your ability to attract a manager like that means that you can, in a perfect world, we don't know how it's going to happen. You're absolutely right, Dave. Guys come in and just face plant. In a perfect world, sorry, Frank de Boer, I'm not sorry, but you know, I'm surprised that Anders hasn't run the Jose Mourinho clip by now. But that you can like turn your club around pretty quickly because it is MLS. So I think that one's interesting. I'd love to see him in. I'd love to see Vieira back. That would make this league absolutely better. And that's what we all want. We want to watch better soccer every single week.
Ooh, what about Montreal, Toronto, Vieira, Henry?
Yeah, dude.
Worth it.
I'm openly rooting for Toronto to sign Patrick Vieira as their head coach because that would be amazing. Yes. Like the Canadian Classique with those two guys, I would pay my own money.
Yeah, that's the all-time greatest. Mm-hmm. The all-time greatest Canadian Classique.
Yeah.
With those two coaches.
By the way, The Athletic is also reporting, rumoring and reporting, because Sam and Paul did this one together, that there have been no conversations between Greg Vanney and the Galaxy, which is interesting.
I don't know what to say about that. Like that.
I can also report that we haven't done a podcast tonight, but.
Yeah. But I don't know the advantage of saying that, right? Like which side is going to say that? I don't know who looks better by hiding the fact that they're about to sign this coach.
Maybe we all thought the inevitable and maybe it's not as inevitable as we thought.
What would be the most surprising if Greg Vanney stepped down from Toronto FC without a clear idea of what was next, especially with the openings that are available? Like it would be shocking to me if he did what Caleb Porter did and took the year off because there are the jobs available that you'd think he would want to go to, the Galaxy being the top of them. But if it's not the Galaxy, you would have to think he would be his agents and are in conversations with these other clubs saying that this is where he wants to go and this is why he's stepping down.
I mean, if you're DC United and Greg Vanney for some reason doesn't want the Galaxy, then you pick up the phone and you say, Greg Vanney, please take our job. Right. Like that, and like DC United, I think we all know is probably not going to spend like the Galaxy do, but I kind of like that roster a little bit. Like there's some stuff to work with there, and a good coach can turn something in. So
they have a lot of wingers. He loves wingers.
They have a lot of wingers. He does. I will be surprised if Greg Vanney's not managing an MLS next year. And I know like it's Sam and Paul, so you know the reporting's good, but I will be surprised if he's not managing with the Galaxy.
We were talking about why would you say this? What's the benefit? To me, for Greg Vanney in this move, he is going to want control of personnel. So maybe this is part of the negotiation process of saying, I want this. You are going to have to come to the table with this. And it's not necessarily just the bag, although that's obviously always important in negotiations. But it's the role. It's the level of power. It's the trust and belief to be the guy that makes the decisions and the level of which that happens.
But you think the pressure would come if people thought he was going to go there? right? The leak would be he wants to be there, but they are not meeting him halfway. Stuff like that. Yeah, that's what's a little bit odd.
Maybe you just play aloof and you're like, I could take it or leave it unless you come with this. I don't know. If I could negotiate better.
Oh. He needs Mino Raiola just on national exactly. TV. Being like, exactly. He needs more. He's done.
Before we get out of here, do we have any good mail? Do we want to talk U.S. El Salvador? I mean, we do, right? It's on Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Unimas Tudien. I threw out just a lineup here that I don't know if it makes any sense coherently. You guys can just rip it apart. Doyle's like falling asleep or he's frozen for me right now. I'm going to go Vines, McKenzie, Zimmerman, Araujo in the back line. I want Yuel Bassett, Aronson, Legette, and then give me some Efra. Just give me Efra from the jump. I don't even want him off the bench. Let him play 30 minutes. If he can't play more, that's fine. And then one of DK or Io. And if we want to just give Io the run just because we want to convince him, that's fine. What do you guys want to see? What are you looking for?
I'm looking at the roster and reacquainting myself with it. I was about to question you why you would have Arujo starting over Brian Reynolds, but then I just realized Brian Reynolds isn't at the camp. So
correct.
Yeah, Kyle Duncan would be the other option. Yeah. Right back. I agree with most of what you said. I think for me, one of the things in the roster, in the depth chart, everything, left back's a question mark. And I think there's three or four options in MLS. You don't think so, Doyle?
No.
Who's the starting left back for the U.S. national team?
Serginho Dest.
And who's the starting right back?
Reggie Cannon.
So the guy who starts for Barcelona isn't going to play his position.
He's been playing a lot of left back for Barcelona.
Not since Alba's come back.
But he has played a lot of left back for Barcelona.
Fair. I'm not saying he can't, but I don't know that we're in a place where Serginho Dest doesn't start at his favorite position.
I'm going to rewind you back. You were saying there were some good options in MLS.
So I think Sam Vines is a guy between Sam Vines, DeJuan Jones, and Chase Gasper. If one of them can elevate themselves, and I think to a level of like what we got from Justin Morrow throughout his career, they can play at the international level, then Serginho Dest has to be the starting right back. And that's an option that you have. So I'm going to watch Sam Vines in this game because I think he has the capability, the physicality, the technical ability to play at the international level. Just have to see it over the next year or two.
I'm a big Sam Vine stan, so I want to see him, certainly.
I just want to say from your lineup, Weavy, Cole Bassett loses his value if you move him back to a number 8. Cole Bassett's thing is those late arriving runs into the box, so I think you have to play him as an attacking midfielder, and you have to figure out how to have those deeper lying midfielders carry a little bit more of the play, and then how to have really how and then West, allow
Weston McKennie your gets into the box forward as an 8.
That's true, but Weston McKennie plays for Juventus.
He was doing it wherever he's played as an 8.
Yeah,
if your argument is just getting into the box, you can still do it from the 8 position. Just I think this is a game where a camp where I want to see Mark McKenzie take the next step. Mm-hmm. And as a center back and being John Brooks' partner, because I think ultimately that's what's going to happen. So having a center back who's comfortable on the ball, who can read the game well, who's athletic as anyone, but also is comfortable taking the ball up and playing those balls, switch balls, right foot, left foot. I like that. So I'm really interested to see him. And then up top, being a former striker, I want to see Io or DK take that opportunity with both hands and run with it.
Who would you want to see? Pick one to start.
If I'm picking between the two, I would like to see Io Akinola. I think what I've seen from him this year, his anticipation, his runs, his finishing, I want to see more of him.
All right. Wednesday, 7:30. Unimas Tudien, U.S. El Salvador. Check that one out. Any good mail before we get out of here? Anything we want to hit?
Yeah, we have some questions from an SKC fan who says, who should SKC go out and get next year as an American center back? The main ones I can think of who are probably available. One, Tim Parker, new coach. Maybe there's a chance he'd be an asset they'd be willing to trade. Two, Justin Glad. Does he need to trade a new spot? And then three, he brought up Sam Rogers. He said Sounders don't seem inclined to sign him, but a youth national team kid at that position. Is there anyone in MLS that comes up as a player that SKC or any team that needs a center back should be identified.
Word on the street is that the Red Bulls are open for business So Parker sounds like a good shout. And even though he's not the ball playing center back that Peter Vermes has wanted, and even though he struggled this past year, we've seen Tim Parker play really good soccer for some really good teams in the past. So that would seem to make a lot of sense if you want to go with someone who has proven in MLS. And given what we've seen from Sporting over the past 2 years, they probably do need to do that.
TBD, does that mean an Aaron Long could be open for business? Or
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think anything is off the table, but if they were going to get rid of Aaron Long, I think they would have sold him to West fair. Ham for $5 million.
That would have been a better move on their part, huh? Yeah, that would have worked out.
They could probably sell him to Cholos for half the price in a year or so.
Yeah, right. And also, like, you can't get rid of Aaron Long because, like, we saw it with Ike, we saw it with LGP.
Yeah, it lowers your floor so much.
Well, like, you don't. Walker Zimmerman, you don't get rid of a best 11 caliber center back in his prime. If you do that, you're going to go in the tank defensively.
One last thing. Tom Kotvis got first place in the Continental Extra Time League last season, he says. I'm going to go check that, Tom. But I have your address. You say you're a size medium. I do not have any jerseys. All of our jerseys remain in the black swag bag, trash bag, buried somewhere at the MLS offices that I just have not been to in years. Andres says he has jerseys and he will send. Going to send you Topps cards, but nice. We'll figure this out, Tom. We got you, man. We'll be back on Thursday.
Get Tom the jersey.
Andres says he has.
Should
him.
We
he
get him a new? Him. Should we get him a new Goshire FC jersey?
The Shire.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
The Gosses.
Just think about it, Charlie. Think about it. You got all night to do it.
Always
right,
be thinking about
we're
it.
We're out of here. I think this is our last post-game show live on YouTube. So MLS Cup pregame and post-game show presented by Audi. They'll be awesome. Come tune in. Check them out. But that's it for us. Thank you so much if you watched all these with us. Rocked along. Listened to the podcasts. We've had a great time doing them. Burning the midnight oil. Having a little brown liquor with you. You know, just doing what we love to do, which is talk Major League Soccer, MLS Cup. Coming up on Saturday, Columbus Crew hosting this thing at Mapfre Stadium. Seattle Sounders right where they were meant to be 4 times in 5 years. Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, Fox, Unimas, Tudien, TSN, and TVR. Just one game left of a crazy, crazy, unpredictable, at times painful MLS season. But I hope it will be a wonderful ending. Yes, painful. It was painful at times. I've experienced pain this year, all right? I will. I'm sure that some of our listeners have as well. We're out of here. Subscribe to the podcast if you don't already. We'll see you on Thursday. Have some interviews, the full game preview. If you have any thoughts, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Enjoy your week, everybody.